And to Washington's support for the Zionist regime, the House of Representatives has just approved to give Israel billions of more dollars. The more it kills, it seems, the more the regime is supported by the Western hegemonic front, especially its leader, the United States of America. I'd like to welcome my guests to this program. Out of Vancouver, Khalid Barakat, spokesperson of the Masar Badil movement. And out of Moscow, Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Basira Press. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let me start it off in Vancouver with Khalid. Khalid, just today, more mass graves were discovered in Khan Yunis at the Nasser Hospital, the bodies of hundreds of patients who were massacred by regime forces and simply dumped into mass graves were found. Let's start with your thoughts on the level of depravity of this regime and the way its backers simply look the other way. Okay, seems I've lost Khalid. Ali, I'm going to pose that question to you. Go ahead. Did you hear the question?
Yes. I mean, it's just every day we discover these massacres or new leftovers of other massacres. At previous massacres, they discover mass graves like this. And this is an everyday occurrence. And yet, nothing happens really except for that which is done by the resistance axis. As far as the rest of the world powers, they don't really do anything, but they still harp on about fake news that has already been debunked about the mass rapes, about beheaded babies, about all these different types of things. Even the original people who submitted those fake stories have had to admit to their falsity, but only after 30,000 people died, only when it's too late. But still, people are still labeled as this, that, or the other for questioning these official stories, even though the evidence is very easy to see. So it's just a matter, it's just really showing the naked face of the so-called international community, its ambivalence, its apathy towards these grave crimes. And really that's why I think that the world should really consider the resistance axis led by Iran to be the heroic force that is actually trying to put a stop to this genocide. Perhaps the only time that there were no airstrikes on Gaza or even the sound of warplanes flying over Gaza was during the Operation True Promise,
when
Iran's drones and ballistic missiles were flying over the skies of occupied Palestine.
Well, Ali, staying with you, hopefully our technical issues will be sorted out with Khalid. But inshallah, in the middle of the Zionist entity committing more heinous crimes in Gaza, why would the American regime's House of Representatives approve to give $26 billion more to the Israeli regime? I mean, in the middle of all of this, as there are more protests taking place, why would they do it at this time?
It just goes to show how complicit they are in this genocide, and that the Zionist agenda is an extension of the American agenda, which is a satanic agenda. They're really there to oppose everything that is godly, everything that is right and wholesome on this earth, and just to carry out as much evil as possible. The depth and the evil of this regime is so deep-seated, it can't even be described in materialistic terms. We're dealing a very, very deep spiritual evil. These are really servants of the devil. The United States can pretend as much as it likes to be a Christian nation, but no Christian nation would put up with mass bloodshed, with a financial system based off of usury that enables them to finance all these things, and at the same time take bread off the backs of the American people. This aid package is not to the benefit of anybody except a very satanic system that sits in Washington, D.C., and basically sucks the blood of the entire world. I mean, the poor people in their own country and the people around the world. We can see rivers and rivers of blood is what fuels the comfort of the United States system. And there's really no rational explanation for what they're doing. These people are absolute psychopaths, and they do not deserve to stay in power, not for one second longer.
All right, stay with me, Ali. Khalid has rejoined us. Sorry, viewers, technical issues that we had. Well, Khalid, does the approval of these new funds by the House mean that the regime is being given a green light to continue with this genocide? I mean, is there any other way of looking at it?
Yes, salam alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Marzia, and to your guest, Brother Ali. What's happening is that the United States is arming the Zionist regime to the teeth, not just with financial funds, but also with military and political support. The United States is adopting a strategy where on the ground they are actually leading this war crimes and genocide against the Palestinian people, and the blood of Palestinians are on the U.S. hands. But on rhetoric and in media, they, you know, talk about humanitarian aid and less killing of Palestinian civilians. In reality, the United States and Israel are both committing this genocide against the Palestinian people. The United States, on the actual and real policies, what they do is that they have been blocking any efforts to get a ceasefire. They have been sending Israel all kinds of weapons, approving funds to the Israeli occupation forces, and at the same time blocking even, accepting Palestine as a full member in the United Nations. I mean, to that level, the United States is willing to use its veto power in order to support Israel. Now, why the United States is doing this when we see that the U.S., the American people are actually voicing their rejection to these war crimes and saying that we don't want our tax money to go to a genocide? The reason is because Biden have no, Biden is not the United States. And at the same time, Biden doesn't care if, more 10,000 or 20,000 Palestinians are killed, as long as, you know, Bibi Netanyahu and his government, they're happy and they, they won't create problems for him in an election time. But at the same time, we have to look at the decision makers in the United States. The U.S. regime has pillars that decide its strategy. You know, the Pentagon, the CIA, the State Department, all of these pillars, the agencies, basically look at Israel as it's their colony, and that the war in the region, it's their war. And that's why the United States is willing to get engaged in bombing anyone in the region, maybe with the exception of Iran, because Iran is a very powerful country. But with the exception of Iran, they're willing to do anything to the region in order to impose their hegemony and their will over the people of the region. That's basically the war that Palestinian people today are subject to is carried by the United States. This war could end in one phone call if the U.S. wants to stop the war, but they don't want it.
Well, Khaled, you talked about, you said that basically because of Netanyahu, Biden wants to keep this war going. What about the American people themselves? This is, as you said, an election year. And I mean, how can a part of Congress totally ignore the growing calls by the American people that are demanding a ceasefire and an end to support of the Israeli regime?
I mean, if anything, the heroic October 7th military offensive carried by the Palestinian resistance against the Zionist regime have exposed the so-called liberal democracy and Western democracy. And that is because the people could say actually something and their regimes say something else. Their government actually take a different kind of position. And that tells you that the public opinion in, let's say, the UK, how important is it for, you know, the ruling class of the UK? It's nothing. Millions of people in London have been talking about, you know, stop the genocide, stop the war crimes against the Palestinian people, and the government in UK don't care about their opinion at all. The other thing is that we have been also seeing how much this imperialist, colonialist powers are exposed when it comes to the issue of human rights. The United States today, Germany, and these, you know, fascist regimes, they cannot lecture anyone about human rights and about human dignity and about, you know, peace and justice. You know, no one is going to believe them because they, you know, the world is watching and seeing that this, these war crimes against our people in Gaza, especially after 17 years of siege, is carried at the hands of Germany and France and UK and the United States, Saudi Arabia, Emirates, Jordan. I mean, imperialist power and their puppets regime in the area. And the only power today that is standing up against this vicious criminal camp is Iran and the camp of resistance in the region. They are getting you know, the support of the people of the region. I challenge them to do a referendum you know, in Egypt and see that the vast majority of the people in Egypt support Iran and not the, you know, Egyptian regime. They support Yemen and not this fascist, you know, General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. The same goes on the vast majority of the Muslim world and the Arab world. Today, we are entering a new stage where the Zionist colonialist project is crumbling from within because it's a very corrupted regime. And as we expected, that it's going to start cracking, you know, the Israeli army have failed in all of their objectives in the last 6 months except killing people. But they, the military operation that they declare and its objectives have failed. The Palestinian resistance is still very strong in Gaza and in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Yemen, and they are actually not just winning the hearts and the minds of the people in the region, but also the hearts and the minds of the people of the world.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Ali, let's look at what's happening inside the U.S. itself, because not only are activists breaking up meetings, boycotting and sanctioning activities on American university campuses, they're growing. But Columbia University has become the center as students have been protesting the university's investment in Zionist entity. Now, the university and police have cracked down hard on these students. I mean, why? What happened? Because you know, freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, especially on university campuses, is something that a lot of students perhaps thought that it was really their right to have and to participate in.
In the United States and in the liberal world in general, all these freedoms are only the freedom to pursue falsehood. So what Columbia University students are essentially doing is reestablishing what academia, what higher education is supposed to be, which is a free and open playing field to seek the truth, not to drown in falsehood. Unfortunately, since the Rockefeller family took over the educational system in the early 1900s, the educational system has been manipulated in order to support certain narratives. Rather than seeking the truth, students are essentially told pre-fabricated narratives on many different subjects. For example, even in the medical field, they're taught only that pharmaceuticals are the best. They're not taught about nutrition, all these other types of things. In the realm of history and politics, They're taught the imperialist version of history, the Zionist version of history, even the so-called radical politics of universities. Trotskyism is labor Zionism, basically the idea that everybody's imperialist, America's imperialist, Iran is imperialist, and it opposes all authority, even the authority of God himself. That's why you have people going into university and then coming out more dumb and more immature than when they came out. The only thing they know how to do is tell you how many hundreds of genders there are. She, her, he, him, you're a frog or something like that. I don't know. And they get very childishly angry if you disagree with them. That's the so-called radical politics. So what the Columbia University students are really showing what it really means to be a revolutionary, what it really means to be a truth seeker. Because they're not just demanding these kind of like liberal Zionist platitudes like ceasefire now or stop apartheid or all these other kinds of mid-level slogans. They're actually standing in favor of the resistance. They're raising the names of the resistance and showing that free people around the world respect the resistance, even in the hearts of America. And they understand who is the real terrorist. They understand who is the real hero in this equation. So they're not even self-censoring themselves in order to appeal to the sensibilities of different liberal, the liberal cosmopolitan liberal wing of the imperialist pie. So it's really what they're doing is brave, and I think that's why there's such a big crackdown, because they're not abiding to liberal Zionist narratives, and they're breaking down this kind of Rockefeller model of education by really establishing what it means to stand for the truth and to oppose falsehood, which is what academia really should be, but it hasn't been for many decades now.
Right, indeed. Well, Khaled, students from other universities have joined in solidarity with Columbia. How afraid do you think the powers that be are as they witness this growing awareness of young people and the risk of losing the narrative which they have promoted for so long?
Well, the United States regime is absolutely are in fear and scared because of the student movement. The solidarity with Palestine in U.S. campuses did not start on October 7th, but we have been witnessing a qualitative work by the students, brave students from all walks and different backgrounds, Palestinians, Arabs, non-Arabs, Jewish, brave students who are part of this movement in campuses. And the United States gets even more worried when the universities like Harvard, Columbia, Yale, some of these universities, that they understand that these students in 5 years from now, they are going to be leading, and they will be in positions of lawyers and judges and, very important positions. And they see that also the younger generation in the United States, the vast majority of them, they don't want to just end the Israeli occupation, they want to end Israel as a Zionist racist regime. And this call of liberating Palestine from the river to the sea is very central in the student movement and in general in support, the movement, solidarity movement with the Palestinian people. And this is really changing the entire situation, because what's happening is that you get like Canadian campuses calling for the boycott of Israeli academia, Israeli institutions. And these universities are not just an echo or an expression of a younger generation, especially the youth, but also the university's faculties and academia are also getting involved in more support of the Palestinian people. And this is affecting the internal situation in the United States when it comes to the study of colonialism, the history, and all these disciplines that the Zionists fear. Like when you study the history of our area, West Asia. That's why, for example, you see the Zionist movement in campuses are trying to block any establishment of a serious study center that focus on Iranian studies, to study Iran. They don't want people to know anything about Iran, the history, the people, the culture, the poetry, the literature, the civilization of Iran. They want Iran image to be in the U.S. media as this country that is just supporting, you know, those who hate Israel and the United States. And that's the image they try to promote. But they are also failing on this front as well, because also of new technology and social, you know, media and the creativity of the younger generation in expressing their position against war crimes, genocide, racism. This is also an issue very important because it raises internal issues in the continent here, and that is the struggle of black people in this continent, the black liberation movement, the native indigenous struggle in this continent, and the Palestinian struggle is very much connected to all of these issues. Mm-hmm. So what we are seeing in campuses is coalitions of all different struggles that is opposing the same enemy, and that is the capitalist system in the U.S. and the White House.
Right. Well, Ali, another part of the bill approved by the House of Representatives, which will go to the Senate next week, and will give $60 billion more dollars to Ukraine, $26 billion more dollars to Israel, is a ban on TikTok in the U.S. with its Chinese owner. Now, if the bill passes Congress and is signed into law, the Chinese owner will have 9 months to sell TikTok. Of course, if he doesn't, then it will be banned. By the way, TikTok has been one of the main forms of information on Palestine for the under 30 crowd, and over 170 million Americans use TikTok. Your thoughts?
The TikTok bill is very, very dangerous. The ban on it was actually promoted by AIPAC, which is a foreign lobby group promoting a foreign country, although America is part of their, you know, they have a kind of conjoined twin, you know, existence with the American empire. But this bill in particular, it's not just about TikTok. There's basically going to include the ability to ban any site that may or not be hosted on in so-called enemy countries, or for example, Press TV could be banned, or other outlets, or even independent outlets. For example, my website could be banned, even though, you know, for whatever reason, because they don't want people to hear the truth. They don't want the Iranian perspective to be heard, as they're preparing now for a false flag attack that they're probably going to blame on Iran or Hezbollah. We can hear these echoes in the media that, oh, there's these Hezbollah terror cells in the U.S., even though Hezbollah has nothing to do with killing civilians. It only operates in the Levant region. And as far as terrorism is concerned, it's the one that defeated terrorists. It defeated ISIS in Syria, and it defeated the Zionist terrorists in South Lebanon. So 100%, just as Mossad has done false flags like the 9/11 attack, 7/7, and others, they're going to kill Americans again, and they're going to blame it on Hezbollah. And any website that tells the truth about it, if it's originating from a country that America doesn't like, they're going to erase it.
Just 30 seconds, Ali, I don't have much time. At the end of the day, do you think they will be successful in countering this awareness that is taking place, not only in the United States, but across the world, regarding Palestine and also their own countries and what their governments have been doing?
I believe it's impossible, because God is the one who guides, and there's a great awakening going on. And as the money is being sucked from the American people's pockets towards Ukraine, towards Israel, they're going to be dissatisfied with their own government, and eventually the chickens are going to come home to roost. And the Federal Reserve, the United States government, are all going to find their day of reckoning at the hands of at least some parts of the American people who have some decent hearts and are God-fearing.
All right, and on that note, thank you both for being with me. Khaled Barakat, spokesperson, Masar Badil Movement, Vancouver. Ali Salam, editor-in-chief, Basira Press, out of Moscow. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 17th verse of chapter Naml.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وحشر لسليمان جنوده من الجن والإنس والطير فهم يوزعون.
And gathered for Solomon were his soldiers of the jinn and men and birds, and they were marching in rows.
So, as you listen to the verse, brothers and sisters, we understood that for Solomon is gathered his host of jinn and men and birds. So he controlled them all. وَحُشِرَ لِسُلَيْمَانَ جُنُودُهُ مِنَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنسِ وَالطَّيْرِ. So they were all in his army. فَهُمْ يُوزَعُونَ. And this shows that he had a very strong and extensive power, an army, that they had to stay, the beginning parts, the beginning rows had to be stopped in order for the others to arrive. So, as we said in the previous episode, in the different parts and occasions, the Holy Quran has talked about jinn, and the fact that they have also been called and addressed by the Almighty Allah, Ya Ma'ashara al-Jinni wal-Ins. So they are the ones who have the power to think, they have males and females, they have different kinds of desires, and regarding Prophet Solomon, some of these actually creatures of the Almighty Allah were builders and divers for him. Now, the verse says that the Almighty Allah had so much might and power, and he had given Prophet Solomon some of his power as well. So, the verse says, وَحُشِرَ لِسُلَيْمَانَ جُنُودُهُ مِنَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنسِ وَالطَّيْرِ. And this shows that the forces, the number of the army, was so large that some of them had to be stopped in order to regulate the army. And then it is emphasized upon, فَهُمْ يُوزَعُونَ. They were kept in order. Now, we also talked about the term of حُشِرَ, which comes from حَشْر, and it means bringing out the crowd. And when we take the concept of the next verse with this one as well, we understand that some believe that this territory and land of ants that Solomon arrived is about Syria, and some others believe that it is about Taif. Now, since the statement of this matter had not any effect on the point of the ethical and educational aspects, it has not been spoken of. But what is more important is how large and powerful and massive the army of Solomon was.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, as you were with us, dear listeners, we understood that Prophet Solomon had a very powerful army made of jinn, ins, and also tayr. So, both from humankind's jinn, and also from the birds. And some commentators, we have to mention, that have discussed the fact that whether the whole human beings, jinn and birds, were the army of Solomon, or a part of them formulated this army. This discussion seems rather needless, because undoubtedly Solomon did not govern the whole earth, and the realm of his government was just something about Syria, Jerusalem, and probably some other lands around there. And also, it is understood from the later verses that Solomon had not any kind of dominion over Yemen. And at that time, he did not control Yemen. And he gained his authority over there only after the event of Hupo and the submission of the Queen of Sheba. Now, the Quranic phrase tafaqqat al-tayr, which is mentioned in the upcoming verses, shows that among the birds which were in the obedience of Solomon, there was a hoopoe that when Solomon did not see it over there, he asked about it. So, if all birds were included and there were thousands of hoopoes among them, this meaning could not be correct. So, this is where you have to be careful regarding your understandings from the Holy Quran. The fact that the Holy Quran mentions in this verse is that Prophet Solomon had a very powerful and massive army made up from some parts of men, some parts and groups of jinn, and also some groups of tayr and birds. This is all we understand from this very verse. Also, some more putting this verse along with other verses and traditions of the Holy Quran. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. In the next episode, we will, God willing, talk about the 18th verse of Chapter Naml. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
A two-day international forum dubbed What Future for Palestine kicked off in Rome on Saturday. The initiative, organized by an opposition group called Front of Dissent, has been put together to tackle different topics, namely Zionism, its impact on Palestine and West Asia, the nature of Israel, what changes for the Palestinian resistance after October 7, West Asia in its transition to a multipolar world, and the risk of the Ukraine war escalating into a global conflict. The conference was attended by citizens who are very concerned about the turn the situation has taken in Western countries.
Today's forum is an important attempt to break down the wall of silence surrounding Zionist wrongdoings in West Asia. It is appalling how our mainstream media are covering Israel's brutal war in Gaza. They have created a parallel world and a parallel truth with the aim of covering up the bad things Israel is doing.
The superpowers that support Zionism are former colonial powers, most of them. And they had a role in creating Zionism in the first place. Many people allowed the Zionists to really empower themselves. So they were originally empowered by people who probably had a sense of guilt about the Holocaust, but eventually they became so powerful that they are able to control so many media outlets. They are able to control many politicians.
Speakers at the conference included former diplomats, politicians, journalists, and activists from several countries, including China, the US, Britain, Russia, and many others. Video links were also established with the spokesman for the worldwide anti-Zionist religious group, Neturei Karta International. Analysts at the conference are saying that the aftershocks of the Gaza crisis triggered by Israeli genocidal war are highly likely to reach far beyond West Asia and the Africa region. With the US credibility as a regional security guarantor shot to pieces, West Asia might see increased diplomatic engagement from China and Russia.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the head of the Hamas political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, in Istanbul. During the meeting that lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the two sides discussed the Israeli aggression on Gaza, ways and measures to ensure uninterrupted and sufficient delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and a lasting peace in the West Asia region. During the meeting, President Erdogan stated that amid ongoing tensions in the region, it is important to keep the world's attention on Gaza and not allow the Israeli regime to achieve political gains from its standoff with Iran. In a statement published by the Turkish presidency, Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lie in unity and integrity."
Today's meeting was very important for both Turkey and Hamas to set ground for the upcoming changes. We all know now Qatar is hosting Hamas Bureau, and leaders, as well as playing the role of mediator in negotiations with Israel. While there is a pressure from Washington for Hamas to leave Qatar, and there is the question of where will Hamas go now, we know that the relation of Hamas and Syria is getting better, and it already has a good relation with Iran. But I don't think they are a choice, and for that, Turkey will be the best option.
Analysts say Turkey will not only be hosting Hamas movement leaders and bureau, but will also take the lead in mediating to reach a lasting solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Turkey is trying to play a very important role that is bigger than working on reaching a ceasefire in Gaza. It is rather solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and trying to reach a lasting solution. The 7th of October was a turning point to start working on reaching a lasting solution, and I think Turkey's role is a key for it to maintain good relations with all sides.
Hamas had an office in Turkey since 2011, and Turkey mediated in exchange of prisoners. Turkish president maintains warm relations with Haniyeh and says he will always defend the Palestinian cause. Today's meeting takes place against the backdrop of Qatar potentially stepping back from ceasefire talks. This development could create a vacancy that Ankara is well positioned to fill, given Turkey's established relations, particularly with the Hamas movement, which many view as a strategic advantage. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, more than 70% of the fatalities of the brutal Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip are children and women. Likewise, according to reports issued by the Euro-Mediterranean Center for Human Rights, women and children in Gaza are enduring displacement, death, pain, and suffering in a way that the human mind cannot bear. More than 80% are living in tents without the minimum basic needs to live, without water, without food, with a chilling cold. The current situation is pushing them to the limit, making it impossible to focus on anything but survival.
Today, innocent civilians are placed in inhumane conditions which do not possess the most basic requirements for human survival. When it comes to children and women, the suffering becomes more painful because women's needs are greater. Women today live in tents. There is no bathroom. There is no toilet. They cannot take care of themselves. They have to stand in long lines in front of men's bathrooms, and this means double suffering. Also, do not forget pregnant women or those who gave birth during the attack. We're talking about an aggression that affects all vital aspects.
Pregnant women and those who have given birth in the midst of war are one of the most affected groups. Similarly, the United Nations Population Fund estimated that since the beginning of the Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip, approximately 60,000 women are pregnant, and of them, 5,500 would give birth soon, many of them by cesarean section. This means that terrible hospital sanitary conditions, as well as the food crisis, will endanger their lives and the lives of newborn babies.
Pregnant women are suffering from extreme cold, food shortages, and medicine shortages. We have noticed an increase in the rate of spontaneous abortions, an increase in the rate of premature births, and an increase in cases of small fetuses. Pregnant women leave the hospital about 10 hours after giving birth and go to the tents, where they have no means of living. Newborn babies are exposed to many diseases. We have observed that a large percentage of these women return to the hospital with their children who have caught a cold, and some have also died.
The lack of hygiene and high levels of malnutrition experienced in overcrowded refugee camps are a poisonous mixture. According to the World Food Program, there is a high risk of famine, and cases of dehydration and malnutrition are increasing rapidly. Many mothers say they only eat once a day to survive. However, there are children who have stopped talking or eating because of what they have seen and experienced. Others cry and scream with every loud sound they hear. Months of war have traumatized an entire generation of children.
You see the atmosphere. Making bread is suffering. To go to the bathroom, you have to wait in line. To get water and foods, you also have to wait in line. That is, our entire life is suffering. In the tent where I live, there are approximately 8 people and my daughter, her husband, and her daughter as well. That is 13 people in just 9 square meters. We have to make the bread here, you see, and if we don't find cardboard to light the fire, we can't bake the bread. We only have 1 bottle of water a day and food. If they give us help, we eat. And if they don't give us food, no, because the price of goods is multiplied by 10.
The suffering we experience as children is that we have been forced out of our homes. Our houses were bombed when we were inside it. My friend, who was my cousin, has died. All my friends have died, and I have no one left. Our childhood has been stolen from us. I want to go back to my house. I want the war to end and return home so I can rest.
Gazans continue to call for Israel to fulfill its obligations under international humanitarian law, which begins with the protection of civilian lives. They assure that all they want is the end of this nightmare full of death and pain. Palestinian women have always been the symbol of the strong law of resistance. However, displacement, hunger, and lack of health care due to the Zionist war are disproportionately affecting women. They claim that even their dignity has been lost. And for that reason, they will never forget and they will take revenge for these violations and the misery they are in just because of the Zionist regime. Hoda Hejazi, Gaza, Palestine.
Chanting anti-Israel slogans and carrying placards with messages thanking the IRGC for conducting Operation True Promise. Thousands of Iranians marched down the streets in major cities across the country after the Friday prayers to voice their support for the armed forces and a recent punitive military operation carried out against Israel, dubbed Operation True Promise. The retaliatory attack was in response to Israel's deadly attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria on April the 1st, resulting in the martyrdom of top IRGC commander, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, and 6 other military officers. The punitive retaliatory attack involved a slew of drones and missiles targeting and causing damage to Israeli military bases.
There was a time when they could attack us and get away with it. But now the IRGC has proven that those days are over. I'm so proud of them.
We've been waiting for this moment for so long, ever since they assassinated Haj Qasem. I'm so grateful to our armed forces.
The IRGC really made all Iranians proud. We are so happy. That is why I'm here to thank them.
I was so happy on the night of the attack that I came out on the street to celebrate that the Israelis finally got what they have deserved after committing so many crimes.
The demonstrators also used the opportunity to denounce Israel's genocidal war in Gaza and its crimes against Palestinians.
We are here for the people of Gaza. I don't think any human being can watch what's happening and be indifferent.
Defending the oppressed is our duty. That is why I always take part in these demonstrations.
In cities all across Iran, people took part in mass demonstrations to show their support for the IRGC and Operation True Promise. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
Instead of beating the drums of war, it is the delicate taps of instruments such as the dulcimer or the santur in Persian, and the harmonious melodies of different tongues that should be wafting across borders. As Iran celebrates its National Culture Week in South Africa, officials and the public have visited exhibitions in the key cities of Johannesburg, Pretoria and Cape Town to learn more about the Persian heritage. The event was held at the Castle of Good Hope in Cape Town, which was a Dutch colonial fort and is now a museum.
Culture is a very powerful construct because it forces people to communicate. Not only through language, because I can't speak the Iranian language, they can't speak Afrikaans, which is my mother tongue, but through our handiwork, through our art, through our crafts that we do, we can connect as human beings and exchange ideas, because culture is not devoid of power and of politics.
And this view is shared by South African officials, and even within the Organization of Developing Economies, BRICS Plus, which Iran joined at the beginning of 2024.
But looking forward to us coming out with a university of some sort. And that university is going to be a technology-driven university that has got culture imbued in it. Because we cannot just be driven by, you know, gadgets and technologies. We have to put our humanity within this technology. If we can do that, I believe that we can go very far as a people.
South Africa and Iran have extensive relations, and so through expanding this exchange of unique arts and crafts, they can effectively use the skills of their respective peoples to develop economic ties and, within the framework of BRICS Plus, shape a new world which breaks away from the current system. Culture is important now more than ever, as it fosters understanding and can develop closer relationships between different peoples. In a world overwhelmed with conflict, exhibitions such as these are important for peace. Hassan Siria, Cape Town.
It took the Turkish president more than 3 days to come up with a statement on Iran's retaliatory attack on Israel. Erdogan blamed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for trying to spread conflicts and create tensions in the region through provocations. He added that those who did not voice their rejection of Israel's aggression on Gaza for several months are today condemning Iran's response.
İsrail'in uluslararası hukuku.
The main one responsible for the tension that gripped our hearts on the evening of April 13 is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his bloody administration. Israel is trying to provoke a regional conflict, and its attack on Iran's embassy in Damascus was the last drop.
Turkish government was criticized by the opposition for its silent position from regional tension. Deputy chair of Republican People's Party Erhan Uzgel said he was astonished not to see a single reaction or statement by Erdogan's cabinet or his ministers after the attack.
Amid such an important development in our region and a military assault launched directly by another state targeting Israel for the first time since the October War in 1973, amid such an escalation and such great tension in the region, we're astonished to observe that not a single official, especially the Minister of Foreign Affairs, has made any comment on this issue.
Meanwhile, an opposition parliament member slammed the AK ruling party's double standard, saying they pray for the children of Gaza on one hand while selling the fuel that is used to bomb those children on the other.
Can you imagine this hypocrisy? On the one hand, they are praying for the children of Gaza, and on the other hand, selling fuel to Israeli jets. You say Al-Quds is your red line. You are sending terrorism to Quds. You have Gaza children in one hand and the green dollars on the other hand. Shame on you.
Turkey holds significant importance in the region, and every development has an impact on Turkey politically and economically. Therefore, as experts say, the only way Turkey's silence can be explained is by linking it to the economy. And it is also the reason why Ankara did not immediately cut trade ties with Israel, and it merely severed diplomatic relations. Many believe a country like Turkey and a leadership like the Justice and Development Party were expected to not only defend Iran, but also stand by its Muslim neighbor against Israel.
Turkey had been silent about this issue, but as of yesterday, support came from President Erdogan, blaming Israel and supporting Iran. This was very important and provided a clear and good response. True, Turkey has economic relations with Israel, but if Turkey wants to develop and enhance its relations with Eastern countries, such as Iran, Iraq, Azerbaijan, and even Syria, it can reach a good place regionally. While Turkey has economic relations with Israel, its relationship with Iran goes much further. Therefore, Turkey should definitely stand by Iran in this matter.
Many believe it is time for Turkey to choose where to stand, rather than trying to verbally support the resistance and continue to press ahead with its Western and Israeli collaborations. Erdogan's comments on Iran's retaliatory attacks came late, just like the decision to cut a trade with Israel was late. It seems Ankara is walking a very thin line in its ties with Iran amid fears of harming economic relations with the Israeli regime. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
After days of anticipation, Iran unleashed a barrage of missiles and drones against Israeli targets in the occupied territories. The legitimate response came after Israel attacked Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st, violating all international laws and conventions.
Iran's response comes within the international laws, specifically Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, which gives Iran the legitimate right to defend its national security. The Iranian attack on Israel has changed the geopolitical map in the region, and it was a strong warning to the evil regime.
The Iraqi people, as well as resistance leaders, hailed the Islamic Republic for the unprecedented response, dubbed Operation True Promise, which was within the inherent right of self-defense that entitles any country to protect its diplomatic institutions. Iran's retaliation came after the UN Security Council failed to condemn Israel's attack, which killed 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps.
The resistance and the people of Iraq surely stand by the Islamic Republic of Iran amid the failure of international community and the UN Security Council to condemn the Israeli attack on the Damascus consulate. Iran had all the rights to defend itself and respond with proper means and timing.
The significant operation clearly shows that Iran will not hesitate to take action against any threat to its citizens and institutions. Now, with its capabilities and military evolution, Iran has significantly changed the rules of battlefield in modern times.
Iran's retaliatory operation, which came after a long time of strategic patience in the face of Israeli's brutalities, shows that the Tel Aviv regime's days of hit and run are over. And Iran does not hesitate to exact a devastating revenge on its enemy, despite its all-out Western support. Muslim Salem, Baghdad.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Call of Islam page, well, welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program, and the special guest speaker for today's discussion is Shaykh Rouhani. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, Shaykh Rouhani, for today's discussion, we want to talk about an important topic, because an action which is considered to be a greater sin or a major sin in Islam, and that is suicide or committing suicide. First of all, Shaykh Rouhani, explain for us Islam's perspective regarding the concept of suicide. How does the religion of Islam look at this kind of disorder in life?
Of course, first of all, it is among the major sins. It is haram, Islamically talking, to kill either yourself or the other people. As it is mentioned in the Holy Quran, that من قتل نفسا بغير نفس أو فساد في الأرض فكأنما قتل الناس جميعا. In the Holy Quran, it is said that if someone kills someone بغير نفس أو فساد في الأرض, it is like this, that he killed the whole, let's say, the whole humanity, or yes, all people across the world. So that is, it indicates that what a major sin, what a great sin is, committing suicide.
Yes.
And also in the ayah, surah chapter Nisa, says that وَمَنْ يَقْتُلْ مُؤْمِنًا مُتَعَمِّدًا فَجَزَاؤُهُ جَهَنَّمْ خَالِدًا فِيهَا وَغَضِبَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَلَعَنَهُ وَأَعَدَّلُهُ عَذَابًا عَظِيمًا. In this ayah, it is explicitly mentioned that someone who kills mu'min, so this mu'min is either other people or yourself, if someone commits suicide and kill himself or herself,